It is National Championship Game Day, January 11th, tonight, 8 o'clock, or whatever time kickoff is. The Ohio State Buckeyes take on Nick Saban and the Crimson Tide in what will be an epic game. I mean, this is going to be a game that we will remember for a long time because I think it's going to be a very close game. I think it's a great matchup, really, for both teams. I think the strengths match up with weaknesses. I think the game plans are going to be outstanding to watch. And if you're interested, we're going to live stream on YouTube. Not to start promo already, but youtube.com/menacetosports. I'm here live streaming all game, give you my reaction as an analysis as the game goes on. So make sure you check that out. We will be running it, and I am fired up to not only, you know, be a part of this, watch it, witness it, but also give you my insight into what is going on play by play in real time, or slightly real time. Streaming has a little bit of a delay, but this is going to be big time, man. It is time. It's time to play the game. All the shit we dealt with, COVID, Kevin Warren, all the stuff we've talked about on this show, all the setbacks, all the adversity that not only teams went through, players went through, the landscape went through, but also you went through. I mean, the quarantines, the masks, the social distancing, everything that everyone has done has been the effects on mental health has been outrageous. It's been immense. It's been enormous. And tonight, for a couple of hours, we get to turn on the TV and forget it all and watch the best two teams in college football battle it out to hoist a trophy, a big gold trophy, heavy as shit, by the way. And one of these teams is going to be etched into the history of college football, not only as a national champion, but also as the team that survived adversity and the most adverse year in probably 100 years. Whether it is Alabama, who played a full slate of 12 games, or it is Ohio State, who only played six, had COVID issues run rampant through the program, through the Big Ten Conference, through the Midwest. One of these teams will be crowned possibly the greatest national champion ever because of the adversity that it was added. Now you could make claims that if Ohio State wins, they didn't play a full schedule. You could make claims that Alabama didn't have to play a full landscape. An Ohio State team that had a full season to develop and grow. Regardless of your thoughts and your own personal opinions, the team that wins this game will be unlike any champion that has ever been crowned in college football history. So real quick, we're going to get to one of our sponsors, our loyal sponsor. I would appreciate it if you checked them out, signed up just to maybe place at least a little bet on the national championship game tonight. And really, the NFL playoffs are popping. So we're going to get a quick message for one of them. And also, quick drop, if you want to check out Menace to Picks, at Menace to Picks on Twitter or patreon.com/Menace to Picks. We already have, I think, five advised bets on the national championship game tonight. We're giving out NFL playoffs. We're rolling. And so go check that out. But a quick word from one of our sponsors in MyBookie. It's that time of year when divisions are decided, champions are crowned, and legends are born. It's time for the NFL playoffs. You've waited and watched all year as your team rose to the top or fell to the bottom, but now it's your turn to win big. You've heard the name just about everywhere, MyBookie. They're the industry's leading online sportsbook and casino, and it's not hard to understand why. With thousands of lines to bet on, all your favorite sports, NFL, NBA, and college ball, check, check, check. MMA and soccer, they've got all the latest odds, period. Take advantage of MyBookie's prop builder and live in-game betting where every single run, throw, and touchdown is another chance for you to put cash in your pocket. Visit their mobile-friendly website today and get your deposit matched halfway, up to $1,000. Just use the promo code MENACE when you make your first deposit. The best part is they make it simple with the variety of ways to deposit instantly, including credit card, bank transfer, Bitcoin, and more. Whether you're at home or on the go, on your laptop or your phone, it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid. Bet, win, and get paid at MyBookie. Well, there you have it. Check them out for me. If you like the show, support the show with Patreon or just through MyBookie. Check out one of our affiliates, one of our sponsors. But I'm going to be honest. I don't know how long this show is going to be because I'm not going to talk about anything but this game because I don't really care about any current events or anything else. There'll be a show later in the week for that. But this is the show we've all been waiting for. The preview of the national championship game. Ohio State, Alabama, number one, number three. All the chips on the table. Let's get to the show.
What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there? and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller, blue spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.
You got to love game day as a college football player, college football coach, or college football fan. It doesn't matter which one you are. It's just different on game day. I know you all woke up today a Monday. A case of the Mondays, right? To quote Office Space. You didn't have it because tonight you get to watch the Buckeyes and the Crimson Tide. And I want to just talk about what game day is like on the inside, all the way from wake up. If you saw the video this morning Ohio State put out, it is energy and a buzz like you've never felt in your life. The hairs on my arms are standing up right now thinking about it. I'm getting chills. Because those players wake up. First of all, coaches go through the hallways and they wake the players up. I used to wake all my players up, pound on the door, get their juices flowing, get their energy and at a new level, get their heart pumping. You wake them up and they come down the elevator and then they go outside. They all go through a tunnel of support staff, getting them juiced up, getting them fired up. They get out and then you drink at Ohio State. Mickey Marotti has them drink championship water, just a glass of water to anyone else. But to those Buckeyes, that water means something. When it hits your lips and goes down your throat, that just starts your day, game day. It begins it all. Once you crush that water to start your team game day hydration, then the team collects and you go on a team walk just to get your legs, you know, loose, get your blood flowing, go on about a, I don't know, probably 100, 200 yard walk and just kind of get your juices going, get your blood flowing, get your heart pumping. Then you go get your morning breakfast to kind of start your nutrition for the day. And it's all planned out with nutritionists. I'm not going to go through what the menu is. Who gives a shit? But you eat everyone has a routine. I had players that didn't like to eat. I had players that ate specific things in a specific order because being a great player, a great coach, and a great team comes down to one thing outside of hard work and work ethic, and that is routine. If you have an elite routine, your performance will be elite. And so everyone had their different routine. Every coach, every player. Some coaches went through tip sheets. Some coaches let their players get in their own zone. It's a beautiful thing. But one thing is for sure, as much chaos, as much fun, as much noise, as much chatter and clutter is in the air leading up to this game, when you go in that game day breakfast, it is silence. It is focus. It is confidence being built. It is a team on a mission to go win it all. It's different than when you play Wisconsin. It's different than the Big Ten championship game. You wake up and realize you are the show. Everyone in the country is going to be watching you, all eyes on you. And it feels different. Then, you know, you go through your walkthrough, special teams walkthrough, offense walkthrough, defense walkthrough, whatever you have to go through. And once you're done with all that, you go up in your room and get a chance to just decompress because the tensions are already high. It's already, your heart's already pumping through your chest. So you go relax in your room for a couple hours. Kick your feet up. Watch ESPN or Fox Sports, whatever you want to watch. Hopefully Fox Sports. And then you come back down and you can maybe have one more walkthrough and then it's time for pregame meal. You talk about silence. You talk about focus. As focused as breakfast was, that pregame meal is complete locked in energy. And you go upstairs, put on what they call dress A, shirt and tie. Put on your suit. Everyone uniform, black coat, red tie, white shirt, dressed for a business trip. And then you come down and you're going to go into the pregame highlight where Ohio State is second to none with their video content to get players inspired. You watch the 3, 4, 5 minute pregame highlight Ryan Day probably will talk to the team, and then you go to a clap drill, which is simply a focus drill just to get your mind right, and then you load the bus. And the bus is the highest intensity that you get of the day prior to the field. You sit there, and guys have headphones on. Guys are getting in their zone. You can't hear anything but music through the Beats headphones most of the players have. It'll be a long ride to this stadium down in Miami, but it will be a focused one. And then you get to the stadium, get off the bus, and certainly there will be media. There'll be families. You start to feel the aura of the stadium. You walk in, and every player has a different routine. How they get dressed, the order they get dressed, how they tape their wrists, how they tape their ankles. Do they tape their ankles? Do they tape their wrists? Do they tape their fingers? Every player's different. Some coaches will walk the field with their guys. Some coaches will let their players get ready for the game. The buzz is immense in a game like this. When you take the field prior to fans getting in there, you can feel the energy that this is the national championship of college football. You've worked forever. Your whole lives. Some of these kids have, I mean, this Ohio State team, none of them have ever played in this game. They've thought about it, dreamt about it, worked for it, sweated for it. And now they walk out on the field and they feel it. Their moment has arrived and it is time to go lay it all on the line to try to win a championship. Once you come back in the locker room, you get a pregame speech from your head coach, and then you load up in the tunnel, and you can feel the energy overflowing the cup. And then you hit the field, fireworks go off, and the game is about to begin. It is time, as Mickey Marotti says. So let's talk about this matchup, this epic matchup between number one Alabama, number three Ohio State. Pro Football Focus's number one and number three graded teams in the country. Alabama's a 95.4% overall grade, Ohio State a 94.9%. The only team not named Alabama with a higher team grade than this year's squad in the past 10 years was the 2019 Ohio State team, believe it or not. You look at the offenses on Pro Football Focus. Bama, a 97% grade. Just ridiculous. Number one in the country, obviously. Ohio State, a 94%. On defense, Bama's a 91%. OSU's a 91.4. Ohio State, fourth. Bama, seventh. You look at missed tackles. Everyone knows my feeling on missed tackles. There's no secret to why these two teams are playing for it all. Both teams average single-digit missed tackles on the year, 9 per game. Alabama's averaging 21.5 QB pressures per game and 3 sacks per game. Ohio State averaging 26 QB pressures and 2.6 sacks per game. These defenses are probably the weakness in the game. This should be an offensive firepower game. You look at Alabama's defense, their strength at corner, Josh Jobe and Patrick Surtain. Their weakness are the linebackers in coverage and safeties in tackling. On Ohio State's side of the ball, their strength is up front. Larry Johnson's defensive line has been excellent. Haven't gotten home to the quarterback as much as usual, but they've been phenomenal, specifically the interior D-line, and I've heard Tommy Togiai has tested negative and will play. That's huge for the interior D-line. Tommy Togiai and Haskell Garrett are the best tandem defensive tackles in the United States of America, honestly, in years. Obviously, the weakness at Ohio State is in the secondary, specifically the corners, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I'm going to talk about this from an Ohio State perspective. One, because of my background. Two, because the majority of you are Ohio State fans. But even if you're not, you'll understand and get a glimpse of what I think this game will play out and how it will go. The first thing, when you look at Alabama's offense, a big thing to note is Steve Sarkisian is the head coach at Texas. That is not to be forgotten. That will have an impact in the game. You think about the last time the offensive coordinator got a job from Ohio State or from Alabama. Not the last time, Mike Locksley did, but Lane Kiffin was offensive coordinator. And after the semifinal game, he had taken the FAU job. After the semifinal game, he essentially got fired by Nick Saban because of the lack of focus and how hard it is to manage being a head coach of another school and a coordinator of the offense at Alabama. And why that's important is you think about it. I've been around guys like Tom Herman, Dan Mullen that got head coaching jobs as offensive coordinators while we were on a national championship run. Difference being, Urban Meyer is an offensive coach, so he could step in and help. Nick Saban is a defensive coach. He needs a strong, focused head coach of the offense on that side of the ball. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge piece of the pie. how locked in and how well does Steve Sarkisian do with the distraction of now being a head coach at Texas, for God's sake? It's not FAU. It's Texas. I think that's going to be huge. But when you look at Alabama up front, people are going to say, oh, it starts with Mac Jones or Devontae Smith. No, no, no. It all starts with the Remington Award winner, Landon Dickerson, the All-American center, and this offensive line. They're the best offensive line in the country. After watching all the film, they're better than Notre Dame. They're better than Ohio State. It's the best offensive line in the country, and it's why guys like Najee Harris are able to play so well. It's why Mac Jones has the time and the ability to just pick apart defenses. He's the third highest graded player on the team. He's the highest graded player not named Mac Jones or Devontae Smith. He is the key to the castle at Alabama. And as he goes, the offense goes. Simple as that. But let's take a look at the first team All-American quarterback, Mac Jones. He has been outstanding, obviously. He's the number two QB in America when kept clean. Number one is actually Justin Fields. He's eighth in America versus pressure. He only has been sacked 11% of the time that he's been pressured. So when he's pressured, he only takes 11% sacks. Compare that to Justin Fields, who takes 29% sacks when he's pressured. That is a huge stat. He gets rid of the ball, he evades pressure, and he doesn't take sacks. That's huge. He gets the ball out 2.5 seconds, snap to throw, compared to Fields' 2.8 seconds. 0.3 seconds is a lifetime for a tackle to pass block a defensive end or a blitz. Here's the real thing that makes me nervous for Ohio State about Mac Jones. He's more effective versus blitz, partially because their O-line and pass pro are so good, but he's 82% adjusted completion percentage versus base defense and 86% adjusted completion percentage versus blitz. Surprisingly, while Justin Fields receives a 3.1% bump in production when throwing play-action pass, Mac Jones actually has a 1.7% decrease. What does that mean? Let's back that up. When Alabama runs drop-back pass, Mac Jones is 1.7% better than when they play-action pass. Why? He's the type of quarterback that likes to drop back, see the field, and execute. When he turns his eyes and head away from the defense and has to run fake, he is not as good. So expect drop back pass. And that's what they've done all year. 16 of his 36 touchdowns were on deep balls. 44% of his touchdowns were on shots. Major point for Ohio State. They cannot get beat deep. They have to, we'll get to it later, but they have to play softer coverage. Get over it. They're going to give up some underneath throws. If they don't get beat deep, they're going to win the game. Now, his wide receiver core has been phenomenal. I mean, every player on offense in the pass game, they only have 6 drops in 12 games. Comparatively, Ohio State has 9 drops in 6 games. So 3 more drops in half as many games. They've been outstanding. Part of it is ball placement, and part of it is just ball reception. So here's the tendency report on Mac Jones. Where is his weakness, right? First team All-American, has looked outstanding. When you watch the film and look at the analytics, he has a heavy middle of the field focus. Usually, when you break down QB's throws, about half of their throws are in the middle of the field and a quarter outside either hash. That's about normal, right? 70% of his throws, completions, and yards are in the middle of the field. That is a big deal, especially for this Ohio State team to take away the middle of the field. If they can force him to live outside, they got a chance. And if their corners can step up, they're going to win the game. Simple as that. Quarterbacks like to throw in the middle of the field. Shorter throws, they can see it better. They don't have to turn their body and head as much to make the throws. Think about it. If I drop back as a quarterback, everything is pointed to throw it to the middle of the field, right? It's way easier. It's ideal. And Steve Sarkisian has done a great job giving Mac Jones middle of the field options, and Mac Jones has lived there. So that's Mac Jones in a nutshell. And now let's get to the run game before we get to the Heisman winner. Najee Harris, the first-team All-American running back, has been outstanding. A lot of the reason because that offensive line has been outstanding. But here's where what the analytics say, and here's where Ohio State needs to contain him. 611 of his 1,385 yards were outside runs, perimeter runs. That's 44% of his yards outside. Compare that to Trey Sermon, who's 29%. Of his yards are outside runs. Najee Harris has been the most effective on the perimeter. He's number one in America with 44 runs over 10 yards. One out of every 5 carries is over 10 yards. That's phenomenal. Trey Sermon actually is 1 for every 4, so just comparatively, he's actually been more explosive in those 10-yard increments. Najee has the second most avoided tackles in America at 66. So Ohio State has the number two rush defense. That's the matchup. They got to stop the run and then limit the Mac Jones to Devontae Smith matchup. They have the number two rush defense in America. So you would think, based on stats, that should be a great matchup for Ohio State. But don't let the stats deceive you. The number one rush defense in America is Georgia. And Najee Harris went off for 152 yards and a touchdown on 31 carries. That is not a point of contention. It's not, I wouldn't say checkmark Buckeyes. That rush defense has to show up because this offense can run the ball against anybody. Now, Najee Harris is a little bit one-dimensional. They don't utilize him in the throw game much, so his game is in handoffs and screens occasionally. But I think the biggest challenge for Ohio State is the receiver core. Paul Feinbaum has mentioned that Jaylen Waddle will play in this game. That is yet to be seen. And if he does, it'll really be interesting to see, is he the same Jaylen Waddle? Because, mind you, last year and early in the season, he was the best receiver on this team. And this team had another receiver just win the freaking Heisman Trophy for the first time in 30 years. Devontae Smith is the key to this offense. 36% of all passes are caught by the Heisman winner. 39% of all yards. 54%, over half of all passing touchdowns are to this single player. Now, he has a weakness. Of course he does, right? His right eye dominance is a huge factor in his performance. When you look at his catches over 10 yards, when your eye and hand dominance matter the most, right? If you catch a ball at 5 yards, your eye-hand dominance don't matter that much because you have to get your both eyes, you have to turn your body to the quarterback, right? It's less impactful. But over 10 yards is where now it's an angular throw and you're going to have one eye see the ball better than the other. His right eye dominance is huge because over 10 yards, the left side of the field and middle of the field, there's a 73% completion percentage. On the right side of the field, he only catches 30% of Mac Jones' throws. That's huge. His right eye is blinded by his nose. Not to get too complicated, but he's not as good on the right side of the field. And I hope Ohio State knows that. If they can get him on the right side of the field and check coverages when he's on the right side of the field, they will be able to flood his dominant locations and alignments. He is small. He's not a make-you-miss receiver. He doesn't catch the ball and make you miss. What he does is run away from people. With all this talk of this loaded Bama pass game, assuming Jaylen Waddle either doesn't play or he's not his 100% self, Alabama only has one wide receiver grading over 71% on the team, and it's Devontae Smith. John Metchie is a solid player, but he isn't anything to write home about. But a fun fact about Metchie, Mac Jones has not thrown a single interception yet when he targeted him. So he's at least not allowed a bad play to happen, where Devontae Smith is, I think, allowed two. This Alabama offense is one of the best offenses I've seen in a while, and we'll get to the keys to the victory at the end of the show. But it's loaded. The three-headed monster with a phenomenal... I mean, you're talking about the best quarterback in the country based on All-American status, right? An All-American running back, an All-American receiver, an All-American left tackle, and an All-American center. I mean, this is an NFL-built offense is what it is. It's going to be a huge, tall task for Kerry Combs, Larry Johnson, Greg Madison, and Al Washington, and really Ryan Day. He flipped to the other side of the ball and look at Bama's defense. I saw College Football XM Radio, I think, put out Jay Book. If you don't follow him on Twitter, I saw he put it out. Alabama is 127th in America defending the tight end. They've allowed 50 receptions, over 600 yards, and 36 first down conversions. That's huge, especially with what Ohio State did against Clemson involving the tight ends in the throw game. That's going to be a key point here coming up at the end of the show. When you look at this defense, it is a solid defense, not a great defense. The strength is in their secondary, specifically their corners. The weakness is in their linebacking duo in the pass game. They're good in run defense. But you always say the linebacking core are the obvious glaring weakness in the pass game. And it starts with Christian Harris, number 8, if you want to keep an eye on him. He's the fish of the defense. He's allowed 485 yards and 3 touchdowns on the year with a 74% completion percentage. Ohio State has to find a way to isolate he and Dylan Moses, because in all, the linebacking duo of Harris and Moses have given up 757 yards between the two of them. Two players have almost given up 1,000 yards. That's huge, and Ohio State has to go at them. They're very strong at cornerback with the number one cornerback on pretty much every NFL draft board in Patrick Surtain Jr., and Josh Jobe's been playing extremely well this year. 42% and 44% completion percentages, respectively, between the two. Only three touchdowns given up through 12 games between them. If you want to look at the other side of the ball, Sean Wade and Seven Banks give up 67% and 48% completion percentage and have given up seven touchdowns in half as many games. If you just doubled it, they would, you know, just statistically, they would have given up 14 touchdowns compared to the duo at Alabama who's given up three in 12 games. But this secondary is not all glitter and gold. They have weaknesses. Their two weaknesses in pass coverage start with their third corner, Malachi Moore. 63% completion percentage, 445 yards, and one touchdown. He takes risks. He's a really good player. He has three interceptions, so it's not like he's a bad player, and he's only given up one touchdown, but he's the most targeted player overall on the team. Teams don't target him for no reason. 67 targets through 12 games. The other guy's Jordan Battle. He's an Ohio State recruit. I recruited him. 72% completion percentage for 190 yards and two touchdowns. He is a weakness in coverage if they have one. And here's the thing. Alabama loves to play man coverage. So the battle will really be, can Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson get the best of Pat Surtain or Josh Jobe, or will the third option against a weaker cover guy be the difference in the pass game? Jordan Battle and Daniel Wright, who, if you don't know him, he's the brother of Florida Gator great Major Wright, have been very sloppy tackling. 26 missed tackles between the pair. That's a quarter of Alabama's missed tackles this year are between the two starting safeties. And the question is this: how can Ohio State isolate the safeties in the run game in space? Trey Sermon versus Jordan Battle or Daniel Wright with space equals advantage Buckeyes. Alabama relies on pass rush and pressures to blanket their inefficiencies in pass coverage. They have 258 quarterback pressures and 34 sacks on the year. That will be problematic for Ohio State because their pass pro has been, I don't even want to call it, it's been awful. They've allowed the 101st most sacks in the country, almost three per game. That's bad. And their interior O-line needs to pass pro better. When you look at Ohio State on offense, and Justin Fields specifically, different than most elite quarterbacks, he is the number one quarterback in America when he's kept clean. Almost a 90% completion percentage when he's not pressured. But the moral of the story is Alabama needs to and will try to pressure Justin Fields. Expect blitzes like crazy. Expect twists by D-line like crazy. Because one, Ohio State has struggled in pass pro, and two, he's just too damn good when he's not pressured. Under pressure, he has a 38% completion percentage. That's a 44% drop-off from when he's not pressured. He has a 3-4 touchdown to interception ratio when he's under pressure. Compare that to 18-2 ratio when he's kept clean. He's just simply a different player when he's allowed time. Eight of Justin's 21 touchdowns are on deep balls. But the other thing to note that I've found as I studied was 82% of his throws are to his right or middle of the field. As he moves left to right and throws, his effectivity goes way down when it comes to touchdowns and interceptions. To his left, 6 touchdowns, 0 picks. In the middle, 10 touchdowns, 2 picks. To the right, 5 touchdowns, 4 picks. It's just something that Bama knows. Something that they know. Make him throw to the right. He already wants to throw to his right. He's not as good to his right. Teams have been trying to force that all year. Staying on the pass game, and you look at Chris Olave, who's one of the best receivers in the country, but his one weakness has the same as last year. It didn't get developed. It didn't get fixed in the offseason, and that's a shame. He's 6-7, middle of the field and left throws on deep balls, and 1-4 to the right. So 6-7 on deep balls to the left and middle of the field, and 1-4 to the right. Same as last year. His right side is not as effective as his left and middle of the field. His eye dominance, right? He's right eye dominant, and he can't see the ball as well on the right, and it didn't get developed. Or the reality is they just need to not put him over there. He's actually perfect on the entire left side of the field. You talk about short, medium, deep, behind the line of scrimmage, every throw to the left side of the field, he has 100% reception rate. compared to 58% reception rate over 10 yards to the right side of the field. So it's almost half as likely he catches the ball on the right compared to the left. That is problematic. The other thing is pressures. Ohio State has allowed 45 pressures in six games. 27 of those have been interior pressures. Wyatt Davis, Josh Myers, and whoever starts at left guard. Harry Miller, Matt Jones, or who I think it should be is Paris Johnson, and we'll tell you why. You look at their PFF grades, which is just, it's an analytic. You can use it. I watch the film and just see what I see. Their overall grades, Harry Miller, 51%, Matt Jones, 78%, Paris Johnson, 88%. Pass game grades, Harry Miller, 40%, Matt Jones, 33%, Paris Johnson, 78%. And then run game grades, Harry Miller, 54%, Matt Jones, 85%, Paris Johnson, 89%. So the reality is this. Best overall candidate at left guard is Paris Johnson. He's almost twice as good of a pass blocker and a little bit better run blocker. Matt Jones has been was an outstanding run blocker in his games when Harry Miller was out, but he was just piss poor in pass pro. And Harry Miller has been below average at both. Paris Johnson should be the left guard right now, but I'll just sip my tea over here and watch at 8 o'clock and see who plays. That's just the reality of it. In the run game, one other thing I wanted to note is Trey Sermon has 53%, over half of his yards are on 15-plus yard runs. He is an explosive back. We know that. I've been preaching it all year that he needs to be and they need to give him a shot. It'll be interesting to see how Tony Alford employs him with Master Teague back and healthy. Will Trey Sermon still be the workhorse? Will he be the guy that carries the load? When you look at Ohio State's defense, it is simple. The corners need to show up. The top three targeted defensive players in the throw game should never be all three of your starting corners. And they are at Ohio State. Sean Wade, Seven Banks, Marcus Williamson. 123 targets, 79 catches, 1,065 yards for 8 touchdowns in 6 games, mind you, and 3 interceptions. The corner play in Buckeye Nation has diminished this year. Simple as that. And I know they lost 2 first rounders, but Sean Wade is as talented as anybody. The trio has not played like the trio last year, and I've already harped on that. I think Sean Wade is playing better and needs to step up in this game and have his first round moment. That's what has to happen. The other thing that needs to happen is Jonathan Cooper needs to have a career day. The defensive end needs to have his best game of his career, especially against All-American Alex Leatherwood. Zach Harrison needs to flash. Show us that number one player in America production. And then Ohio State needs pressures from somewhere outside of the interior D-line. They need blitzes. They need edge pressures. I mean, the linebacker pressures have been non-existent. Through 11 games, Pete Warner has 11, Baron Browning has 5, Tuff Borland has 4, and Justin Hilliard has 2. QB pressures now, that's not sacks. The other thing that's happened from last year to this year is the nickel slash safety, whatever you want to call it, that fourth DB, if they're playing for, production has disappeared compared to Sean Wade in the slot, who was dominant. So that is kind of both sides of the ball, how I see it, what I noticed on film, and my projection, what I see, and the weaknesses and strengths of each team. But now I want to talk about the keys to victory. First, starting with Ohio State's defense. The number one thing they have to do is force Mac Jones to live outside the hashes. He isn't used to living out there. They need to play zone coverage as much as you don't want them to. They need to twist up front and on passing downs to try to create pressures, try to get this O-line off of levels. Mac Jones is going to have a good game. They just can't let him have a career game. They need to overload the middle of the field zones and force outside throws. When they do force them, the corners need to show up today and make plays on the outside. They have to. The number two thing they have to do is force Najee Harris to run at OSU's strength, the interior D-line. That's where Ohio State is strong. They need to use edge pressures and wide alignments by the DNs to not only bottle up Najee Harris and force him between the tackles, but help guys like Tuff Borland play in a funnel instead of in space. If they can box in this offense and make them play between the tackles, Ohio State has the advantage. Number three, they obviously have to limit Devontae Smith in the middle of the field and left hash and tackle him. He will get production. It's the best player in the United States of America. He's going to have catches. He's going to make plays, but they can't let him run after the catch. He's not a make-you-miss receiver, as I said before. He's only forced 9 avoided tackles on the year through 12 games. He doesn't make guys miss. He is just a burner that runs away from people. He's fluid. He's silky smooth. Zone coverage will be huge in this game, and the Silver Bullets need to be aware of where DeVonta Smith is at all times, rally to him, and get him on the ground. Don't let him run after the catch. The last thing, I've said it 3 times, I'll say it one more time. The critical stat or key point or key to the game is the corners need to show up. Kerry Combs as a coordinator isn't near as valuable as Kerry Combs, the cornerback developer. This game will rest heavily on Sean Wade, Seven Banks, and Marcus Williamson. Bottling up the Heisman winner and a healthy Jaylen Waddle will be a tall task, if that is who's out there. Maybe impossible, but so was stopping Amari Cooper and Derrick Henry in 2014, and TJ Yeldon, for that matter. This will be the defining matchup for 2020, and it will be the defining moment in Kerry Combs' early impression as the defensive coordinator in Columbus. Those are the 4 keys to victory for the Buckeyes defense. When you switch to the other side of the ball, Ohio State's keys to victory on offense are simple. Number one, they got to get the tight ends involved. Again, like they did against Clemson. They need to attack the linebackers and safeties in the throw game. The third options in this game will win the game. Obviously, big plays by Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson will be icing on the cake or further ignite the offense. But the game will be won in the throw game with those third options. Whether it's Luke Farrell, whether it's Jeremy Ruckert, whether it's Jameson Williams, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Trey Sermon and screens. That third option will win this game. The second thing they need to do is get Trey Sermon in open space. As I said, it was screens or perimeter runs. They still aren't running perimeter runs. Specifically, if they can get Trey Sermon on those safeties, Jordan Battle and Daniel Wright, that is big chunk yards for the Buckeyes. Big chunk yards and big scores are how they're going to win this game. The third and probably the most important thing is they have to protect Justin Fields. Give him time and he will win this game for the Buckeyes. Who plays at left guard and how they play will be a huge contention point. If Ohio State has to go to 7-man pass pro, leaving 3 guys in routes, it's going to be a long day. That's hard. There's nowhere to go with the ball a lot of times because they have 6 guys in coverage covering 3 guys. They need to be able to protect Justin Fields. If they don't, they won't win. Simple as that. The fourth and final thing this offense has to do and cannot do, they cannot give this Alabama offense extra possessions. No turnovers in this game equals a win for Ryan Day and the Buckeyes. This offense is too good to give extra possessions. They're going to get the ball, let's say, 9 times. If you let them have it 11, that's 2 more chances and 2 more probable scores, if we're being honest. In my opinion, this game will be a high-scoring shootout. I think that I don't know what the over-under said. I think it was 60. I don't remember. I'm not even going to throw it out there. It's on our picks platform if you really want it. If the game goes over, I think Ohio State wins something like 42-38. If the game stays under, that means Ohio State couldn't score with Bama, and Alabama wins. What an epic matchup this will be. What a game this is going to be. Like I mentioned before, I'm live streaming. There's going to be an episode, a lot of this content, out on YouTube here in about 2.5 hours. And then tonight at 8 o'clock, we're live streaming. Come join us. I'm telling you, you won't regret it. YouTube.com/Menace to Sports. I'm live streaming the entire game. On Jump on Patreon, we're going to have a Q&A either after the game or tomorrow morning. I haven't decided yet. But let you guys ask some questions. It's really cool. I did it for the semifinal game, and I will do it for every game forever because it was awesome. People loved it. I interacted with everyone as much as I could. I mean, we got, I think it's like 7,000 views now, people that jumped on that live stream. So check it out. Let me know what you think, and I will see you there. Big day, man. National Championship Monday. The Buckeyes, Crimson Tide, Nick Saban, Ryan Day for their first matchup in what could be several matchups if Nick Saban doesn't retire. So anyways, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I hope you learned something. I spent a lot of time studying film and give you my thoughts. I was spot on for the semifinal game, so let's see how spot on I am for the championship game. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. If you hope you found this entertaining, hope you found this educational, hope you enjoyed it. If nothing else, I hope this got you juiced up and geared up for the National Championship of College Football. And as I say, if it didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.